We have been partnering with them over the last couple of years now. I guess he's mentioned sending a team over. We've sent some funds over there to them and just seeing them as doing strategic work in Uganda. And I've taken a couple of trips over there trying to equip and establish the church there, the leadership of the church there. And so they're becoming to be, over time, important partners for us. And so you're wondering, what are we doing this morning? Well, a couple of times, if you've been with us for any significant amount of time, you've noticed that about every two or three times a year, about every 4 or 5 months or so, we kind of have what's called like a Mission Sunday, and where we bring in an international partner of ours just to kind of give a report. Now, why do we do that? What's the reason behind that? Well, Acts 14, when Paul comes back from his missionary journey, he gets sent out by Antioch, and when he comes back, in Acts chapter 14, verse 25, 26, 27, somewhere around in there, he says that he comes back to Antioch and reports all that God has done to the church in Antioch. And the church in Antioch is rejoicing. In fact, he actually goes, and then in the next chapter, in chapter 15, he's going to go up to Jerusalem. And on his way to Jerusalem, he visits the disciples on the way there, again, describing all of what God is doing in these new churches that are being planted in these new different areas and how God is expanding his kingdom. And again, it says that the disciples rejoiced at what God has been doing. So that's in that same pattern of Acts and in the early church. It's kind of what we want to do. That's the spirit behind what we want to do, not just, hey, here's an international partner who's going to come and give a report, and we're like, okay, get a nice pat on the back, you're doing a good job, now keep doing what you're doing. No, that's not the idea. The idea is like, man, we want you to rejoice. Like, God is at work. In Hutchinson, absolutely, but he's also at work around the world. And we want your hearts to be filled with what God is doing around the world, how the Spirit is on the move, how we can keep in step with that, and what that looks like for us to continue in partnership, to continue to say, yes, we want to see the gospel advance across, to the ends of the earth. We want to see unreached areas to be reached where some of our international partners are, or where the gospel has been misreached. Now, this is maybe a new term for some of you, misreached. You guys have all heard of the term unreached, right? We talk about the term unreached in this church. We have we pray for unreached peoples. But there's also another category. There's a category of once reached. So once reached, if you get the idea, they were at one time, they had the gospel. Churches were thriving and effective, but now they've lost the gospel. The church is going away. So they were once reached. And so we need to keep going back there. There's another category called misreached. Now, misreached is the gospel has got there, but it's almost like it's the wrong gospel. And it actually hasn't taken root there. And that's the case in major parts of Sub-Saharan Africa, the lower parts, where you can see we're talking sometimes 70, 80% Christian. And when we say, when I put the air quotes around, sorry, I got another air quotes here, but you can't see it because of my iPad, but two air quotes around, that they're Christian, they don't have the gospel. It's more of a prosperity gospel. They know some things about Jesus, but they're not actually established and rooted in their faith. So they're misreached. And so that's what, at least the church there, part of what Ripples is trying to do is say, okay, now we want to come in and say, hey, this is the gospel. This is the kingdom. This is what Christ has actually come and done and how he has redeemed a people for himself. And so that's the idea of going. Maybe you're thinking why you guys, so I'm stealing all of your I'm still on your thunder, maybe, but I'm just really passionate about this. So I do want to invite, I'm just going to keep talking if I don't do it now. So Jerry, why don't you come on up? And this is Jerry Heiderscheidt, and this is Joni.
Hi.
And they have, let me see if I can get this thing to work. No can do. There it is. So this is their family, their two beautiful daughters, Grace and Mia. Grace is 13, but she's not good this morning, right? She's sick.
Yeah, she's so Grace is 13, Mia is 10. Grace is not feeling 100%, so they both ended up staying home this morning.
Yeah, so that's why they're not with us today. But that's their two wonderful daughters. Can you just tell us, just by way of introduction, Jerry, how did you get here? What's your story in how maybe God has redeemed you, and then how you even started with Ripples from the Well.
Sure, definitely. So thank you. And I personally appreciate when Luke takes some time to really, he's very passionate about the church and equipping the church. So I know he's apologizing for the introduction, but I really appreciate that. So Jerry and Joni Heiderscheidt, my wife Joni here, was born and raised here in Hutchinson. I was born in Great Bend. I moved here in 2000, and we both lived here up until about 2023 when we relocated to Uganda. So we've been there just over 2 years now. How we got here, this could be a 3-hour, really pointing back to God. It's kind of a statistical impossibility to say that, I don't know, I guess to explain how we got here. So I grew up in a bit of a broken home in Great Bend, family in and out of jail, lots of drugs, lots of different abuses, family members who, in the most literal sense, drank themselves to death. It was not a great upbringing. We were not raised in a way that we were coming from a missionary family or a church-going family. We've grown up in a way that our parents, each of them had married and divorced and remarried and redivorced maybe a dozen times, I think, between the collective parents. We're celebrating 18 years this year and two daughters.
Praise
and so,
God. Yeah.
And so, and I have to point back to God for all of that, because again, I would say again, statistically, like, I should probably be on my third marriage, probably drinking or in prison. Going into high school, I had several businesses that my friends got in trouble for, and I was very fortunate to not get in trouble for. And again, statistically, we shouldn't be doing what we do today. And God's been very gracious to us. Out of high school, Joni and I were together. We got 2005. We had gotten together, and in 2007 we came to know Christ, and that changed the direction for us completely. And again, there's a long story with this, but that was a massive change in our relationship and how we conducted ourselves. Fast forward a few years, 2013, we were introduced to a course called Perspectives on the World Christian Movement, and I don't know if that's many of you are familiar with that. It's a 16-week course, and we went to the first week reluctantly with no intentions to continue, and somebody had given us a scholarship to attend. We had a business that had just failed, and so we did not have the resources to attend, and that 16 weeks, again, was a massive change for us, looking at God's global mission, and they take a lot of time to explain how you can be missional, whether you're actually a goer or a sender, or a financer, a prayer, a mobilizer. There's a lot of ways that you can be involved in God's global mission. And I would say that was another massive turning point for us. Fast forward a couple more years, and we were introduced to a man who lived in Uganda, and that's in East Africa. And I don't know if you have that.
You were a successful businessman at that point.
Yeah, so we had several businesses.
You've always been a serial entrepreneur, but back in high school, it wasn't healthy entrepreneurship.
Yeah. It was on the other side of the legal fence.
But then since Christ, again, serial entrepreneur, just really been successful at business, right?
And yeah, so if you had asked me even, 5 years ago, what's your role in the church? I would say we're a financer, we're a mobilizer, we're a sender. I can help raise money and things like that, but we'll never would be the word I would say. We'll never go. We'll never be someone who goes into a developing country.
We're caution to you all. Don't ever say never to God.
I think he's keeping track. He's writing that down. And
yeah, right.
So all of my nevers are getting checked off the list lately. So it's been a lot of fun. Public speaking was on my never list, by the way. So yeah, so business has always been a part of us from high school. And in our early years in marriage, we had several businesses throughout Hutchinson. And so leaving those and leaving what I consider to be comfort, newly remodeled house, new businesses that we had just launched as well, a place in the church that we were serving to go to the other side of the planet was not on my top 10 list. I didn't expect to be doing that.
I interrupted you, but you had met this guy online out of the probably 1,000. You said at one point you said like you'd get like hundreds of friend requests, and but then this guy came along and some reason you said, sure, I'll friend you.
So on social media, I was doing different kinds of marketing and things. And so I would get friend requests from all around the world all the time. And I would just go through and delete. And for some reason I got to this guy and I'm like, I accepted his and I kept deleting the rest. And I remember thinking like that was really dumb. Like, I don't know why I accepted that one friend request. And it turns out that he was working with some children in Uganda, and we started following what he was doing. And initially, we were just kind of praying for the work that he was doing, and we started kind of blindly sending money. There was no accountability. There was no board of directors, no organization or structure. It was just us initially sending some money. Yeah, that's kind of how that started.
Not healthy, by the way.
Don't recommend accepting strangers on Facebook. That's not the point of the conversation today.
But so then you ended up, long story short, starting Ripples from the Well with him. He's no longer with the organization, but started Ripples from the Well, decided, you know what, we got to put things in order. We need to help be on the ground. It's kind of difficult to stay stateside. We need to move over there and be on the ground, really helping solidify and make Ripples from the Well healthy. Now, at this point, you might be thinking, what is Ripples from the Well? Some of you, what are you doing? What's the essence of Ripples from the Well?
Yeah, so if you fast forward from the day that we were introduced to this gentleman up until the day that we started taking trips, we started identifying that the need was far greater spiritually and physically in the here and now needs as well. And if you fast forward to about 2022, we started feeling the calling to move there, and that's we ended up moving in 23. But to back up, what do we do? I can tell you that the way that we started is very different than what we do today. And you'll probably see kind of a theme in my story, not qualified, and it wasn't the plan, and kind of how we started is not really, how we finish, if that makes sense. I think the easiest way to explain what we do is probably through the mission statement, and I think you might have a slide with that as well. But how we started was...
You can also, that's where you, just in case you're interested, that's where Uganda is at.
Yeah, so it's, Uganda is just on the north side of Lake Victoria. It's the largest lake in Africa. And so that's the well. It wells up from the earth, so we're creating ripples from the well, just so you kind of get where the name comes from. But the way that we started, I would say we were probably closer to an ATM machine than we were a ministry when we first started. If there was a need, we would send money. We would pray, but we would just send money, and it was somewhat blind. Again, not a healthy way to start. That's 7 years, 8 years ago. Today, I would say, again, the mission statement is probably the best way to describe what it is that we do. And so as you see, it's to equip the church, to care for vulnerable children, cultivate self-sufficient communities that make disciples for Jesus Christ. It's broken into 4 points. Luke actually played a pretty significant role in making some edits to the mission statement and kind of adding the equipping the church side.
Yeah.
I don't mind going through the 4 points, but maybe you can go over the first one.
So last year, I helped them add in that first. It was just the final 3 points, but then seeing the need that, this can't just be a Ripples from the Well project. It has to center, it has to be grounded from the local church, right? So local church is going to be, that's the eternal organization that's going to be there. It's going to be the one that's going to be sustaining. Ripples can go away tomorrow. But the church will be there forever. And secondly, is that something's spiking? Is that you? Oh, geez. Okay. So secondly, is that the church is the one who was given the commission to go and do those other things, right? It wasn't parachurch organizations. It wasn't NGOs, nonprofits. It was the church by God that said, you need to care for vulnerable children, James 1:27. You need to see the kingdom advance, creating self-sustaining communities to make the salt in the earth, right? And you need to make disciples of Jesus Christ, Matthew chapter 28. So those were given to the church. And so Ripples needs to see, how are we actually equipping the church to do these tasks? Not to say, most NGOs, especially in Africa, are like, the church is garbage. That's a strong statement. They're not up to the mark, right? Like I said, they're misreached. So they're very, very unhealthy churches would be a nice way to say it. They're very unhealthy churches. And so NGOs would say, they are not capable of doing the work. We're going to do it for them. There's a huge need. There's a huge gap in addressing these things. The church isn't doing that, so we'll do this. That, I don't think, is what God intended to say. Well, the church is not doing the work, so we're going to raise up somebody else. No, our job is to, how can we equip the church to do these tasks? And again, that's going to be the eternal thing. That's what's going to be there. It's going to be lasting throughout eternity, is that the church is what's going to last, not NGOs. So Ripples is here to help equip the church. That part of that was then planting God's Kingdom Standard Church. And I've talked about Emma. You remember me. I went there 6 months ago or so. I really spent significant time with Emma and a couple of the other leaders that are there to help really establish them, to get them ready for what Ripples is going to do through Kingdom Standard Church to equip them for this task. So that's the idea behind Equip the Church.
Exactly. So I can tell you that in the years leading up to meeting Luke, I think I can speak on behalf of our board when I can say that we knew that there was a piece that was missing, and we didn't really know what our relationship with the church would look like. And so we had been praying for that. And then again, when we met Luke and Julie, I feel like that prayer was answered through that relationship. And as you look at the rest of the mission statement, what better way to fulfill the rest of the mission than through the church? And I can speak logistically to this. So to equip the church, and then we're going to care for vulnerable children. So when we say vulnerable children, I can say that myself and my wife, having served there for several years now, we're not able to identify who's truly vulnerable here and who's not. We don't have the eye for that. Maybe once we're there for 10 or 15 years or something, we could do a better job with that. But in this season, I don't know if that's...
That's might be me.
Might be you.
I'll just stop moving.
So we're not able to identify who's truly vulnerable and who's not. But the church who's serving in a community, who would know better than the church in that community, who's shepherding that community, than the church? And in partnership, we have very, very good social workers that can work in partnership with the church to identify who is truly vulnerable. So when we say we're working with vulnerable children and you decide to sponsor a child or get involved, you can know that we're genuinely working with the least of these. We're James 1:27. We're working with the ones who need it most. And so those are the families that we're pursuing to work with. So as we move on to cultivating self-sufficient communities, I always like to add a piece of clarity. This is not self-sufficient independent of their need of Jesus. This is self-sufficient independent of their need of another organization. Luke had mentioned other churches and other NGOs, and what we often see, a common issue that we run into, is that when a child will grow up in a program, I'm not going to name programs, but child sponsorship programs, when they graduate, the mindset often is, well, I need to go find another NGO to support my family. Rather than saying, I've learned something where I can go care for myself, I can now start a business, or I can get a job, or I've learned a trade. Instead of that, they often are looking for the next nonprofit and a foreigner to support them. And I think that's a bit of a broken model. And so we want to cultivate self-sufficient communities. And we use the word cultivate intentionally because it's not like a 90-day program and you're done. Cultivation takes time. You plant seeds, you don't come back tomorrow for your corn. Like you gotta work this for a while. And so when we're cultivating a self-sufficient community, we do that through a couple of different programs. Initially, we may have to provide some aid. As we're onboarding a family in a new community, we'll see that this child has no shoes, or this family has chronic illnesses, or they don't have mattresses to sleep on, or maybe they're using the same soap for all the different cleaning and bathing, and that's causing like skin problems and stuff. So we see these issues, and we come in with aid. Now, aid, we don't stay in the place of aid very long because that can create dependency. I compare it, I like to read Fickert's books, if you've read Helping Without Hurting and some of those others. If a hurricane come through Florida today, people in Florida need aid right now, right? They're gonna need shelter, food, medical, no strings attached, they need help. But if you overstay your welcome in the position of aid, Florida will become very dependent on a system. So you have to transition out of aid quickly. So we start with aid, but then we want to transition into skills programs and development programs. So practically that looks like entrepreneurship, money management, sex education, parenting, hygiene, things like that, along with practical skills. That's going to be more like farming, tailoring, music, learning how to do hair. And there's other programs that we'll be adding, I think, in the future, like culinary and carpentry and things like that. So we kind of marry these programs together, and that develops what we call a change agent for the community, right? And so now we weave Jesus through all of this. When we get into the last of the four, and you can feel free to chime in on this as well, we really bookend the mission statement with the church. We equip the church, care for vulnerable children, cultivate self-sufficient communities that produce disciples for Jesus Christ. The church is the eternal peace. Ripples is a nonprofit. Someday it'll fade away and people will forget that it ever existed. But the church will remain. And the disciples, I mean, that's the eternal impact that we look to make. And so how do we make disciples? How is that practically addressed within the mission? There are several different ways, but it is in partnership with the church. Our various departments, they do discipleship as well. I'll tell one quick story that happened just a week or two before we came here. We had a scenario where a parent had come to the children's center, and they brought their son, who I think was 11 or 12. And they said that my son was correcting my parenting. Now, this is a family that was new. They in the past, had been an Islamic family. We operate in a community that's about 80% Islam. So this family had recently converted. And the mother comes up to our staff and said, my child was correcting my parenting and quoting this verse. I can't remember what the verse was. And so we're like, okay. She comes in. I don't know if she met with the admin or who she had met with, but they took a moment to explain the verse. They said, well, here's what it means in the original context. And yes, the child is correct in what he's saying, although it probably shouldn't be, you know, addressing you in that way. And we walked through that with them. Now, at the end, our team had explained that, you know, we didn't teach this, though. Like, it's a good lesson, and it's something that we would teach, but we had not yet taught that lesson. And so then the parent was saying, well, like, where did that come from? Where did my child learn this then? And so we did, like, an internal investigation, if you will, to identify who was teaching it. And the child had learned it in our sports department on the pitch. The pitch is the field. They call it the pitch. So they're out there on the field doing their devotionals before soccer practice. We call it football. So before football practice, they were doing their devotionals, and the child had learned that and went home and was teaching it to his parents. And so when we say we're making disciples, it's not just here's a great way to kick a ball or how to grow tomatoes or how to cut hair or make a t-shirt. We try to weave Jesus through the very fabric of everything that we're doing from beginning to end.
Yeah. So just to be clear, you're saying that Ripples is not an orphanage?
It's not an orphanage. We don't dig wells. We're not opposed to digging wells. Maybe someday we'll be in a community that needs that. But those are a couple of the misconceptions that come off.
It's not a school.
It's not a school, no.
Yeah. So how would you best describe then in a nutshell, like what you do in a, like you mentioned kind of like a Boys and Girls Club kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, I would say it's similar to that, and it's a little bit more robust than that as well, whereas we're working with families to help them learn how to budget their finances. We're working with children and teaching them, as they get a little bit older, basic money management, basic parenting and hygiene. You know, we're operating in the community, doing community outreach. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing, I think, that would set us apart. But the things that we're not, as you'd mentioned, like we are not a school. We like the idea of coming into a community that has some of this infrastructure already and simply adding value to what's already happening there, rather than coming in as the rich foreigner that's going to come in and show everybody up and start our own organization and put everybody out of business. We'd rather come in partnership. So it's kind of like we're the conduit in between all the different things. Mm-hmm. In partnership to add value. If there's an organization, and there is, that does entrepreneurship lessons, I don't have to come in and recreate that wheel. We can partner with them. Mm-hmm. If there's a good church, we can partner with them. Right? If there's a good hospital, we can partner with them. So we're kind of the in-between that connects all the dots, and then we do discipleship and Bible study and skills and development training. When the kids are out of school, they come into the center, and then when the kids are in school, We're getting to a place very soon where the parents will be coming in and doing the same training.
So. Yeah. So, why do you think that this work is so? I know we described the work and what we're doing, but why Uganda? Why and then why particularly this location, Jinja, Wanyange? Why Uganda? Like, why is the need so important?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you there's a few things to consider right away. So I can tell you like. Discipleship is kind of tough there. The culture, as you mentioned, is more of a misreached Christian. If you were to Google Uganda, you'll see that 80% are Christian, but I would say the majority of them are misreached.
You just ask them, hey, what's the gospel? What's going to be their response?
They'll say, well, I'll go to heaven because I tithe. I'll go to heaven because I serve at my church. I've been going to the same church for so long. They'll say that, you know, I've donated for so long. It's really wrapped around a lot of money. A lot of the churches that we'll go into in the villages, you'll find the pastor talking about, you know, if you donate enough, I'll buy you a plot of land in heaven, right, from the pulpit. And so there's just a lot of this confused. Benny Hinn's there right now. There's 200,000 Ugandans listening to Benny Hinn last week. So they're pushing a lot of prosperity stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of broken gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we're doing discipleship, and, you know, we have a lot of, like, well, the specific community that we're in is mostly Muslim. And so when we're doing discipleship, they struggle. This is also a prayer request, by the way. A lot of our youth will struggle by they're bringing in this kind of a works-based religion practices meaning that there's this magical scale that keeps track of their good and bad, and as long as their good outweighs their bad, you know, Allah will grant them favor. And the idea that a man, Jesus, to them, again, a prophet, not the Son of God, that his death on the cross would somehow outweigh the sins of the world is not a, that's a tough thing to wrestle with when you've grown up knowing that I have to do enough good and that he was just a man. And so a lot of these practices and polygamy and different things like that get brought into the Christian religion. And so fleshing a lot of that out through discipleship, it's a long process. I would say that the Islamic faith is wide there. It's not so deep or radical. And conversions, I would argue, come a little easier than I thought they would, but the discipleship process is lengthy. Mm-hmm. And so when we're looking at the specific community that we're in, that's one of the challenges that we're dealing with there. Another one would be like the quality of schools. Communication, you know, with any professional organization there is not great. And the quality of education is not great. As Luke mentioned, we're not a school, but it is tempting to go open a school simply because we could have more control over the quality. And so doing this in partnership is more of a long-term play to improve the natural quality on their own.
What makes the schools so not up to par? What would you give me an example of what that looks like?
Well, I think there's certain standards. There's a couple of things. When you're in a, we'll call it material poverty environment, and most people in these environments are trying to figure out where they're going to get food today or how they're going to pay rent that's due 2 months ago, things like that, the school becomes just a paycheck and less of a passion. And when you're in a place where keeping time and operating in a professional manner is not a priority, showing up 2-3 hours late is okay, then that also takes away from the level of professionalism and training. A lot of the schools, they'll teach in the native language. A little trivia for you guys. There's 54 tribes, if I recall, 54 tribes in Uganda. Uganda's just a little bit bigger than Kansas. 54 different tribes, 50-plus languages. And when you get into these villages, they start teaching in the native language. English is actually the language of the nation since the 60s, I think. But when you get into the villages, they teach in the local language. But the testing is done by the government, and that's done in English. So imagine I'm gonna test the pastor. I'm going to teach him all year long in English, but I'm going to test you in French. Get ready, right? It's just, there's not a lot of benefit to that.
Yeah. So we've talked a little about like the need, some of the things that you're facing. What are some of the challenges, the almost like the daily challenges that you face?
So I would say the hardest part for me about living in Uganda is actually saying no. When you have a heart to give and you have a desire to help those who are in need, and you're surrounded by an ocean of need, it is difficult because you have to consistently say, now you can pray with people, but if you say yes to everybody, you'll very quickly be moving back home.
Let me show some of those stats that are up there, that just that as you talk, people can peruse that.
Yeah, so these are, some of the statistics are pretty staggering as well. The ones that I would point out right away is 50% of women are single mothers. The average woman has 5 kids. There are diseases and things that happen that are very preventable, and procedures for that matter that happen that are relatively simple that people cannot afford. And so like malaria is the number one cause of death in Uganda. There's things like that that shouldn't be an issue that are. And so seeing these things consistently and having people ask and they need support consistently is very, very tough. I can tell you that, 60% of the kids, I think it's on the next slide. Yeah, 60% of the kids, they drop out of school in grade school. And so that's, obviously Ripples is making a difference in the very community that we work. But when you look at Uganda as a nation, 60% don't make it through grade school. And the way the testing works is if they fail a test, they have to go back sometimes 1 or 2 grades. And so most kids at that point, they're like, well, I'm not going to retake these grades. I'm just going to go fill in the blank. And when you're in a community like Wanyange, there's not like a factory where everybody goes to work, or business training or some, it's prostitution runs rampant, drug abuse, alcoholism, mm-hmm. And then those who make money typically are either driving a boda, it's a motorcycle, giving rides, making very minimal money, or they make like chapati, it looks like a tortilla, it's like a local snack.
Can I make money by giving people a ride on my scooter?
Of course.
My moped?
Yeah. I got shillings, I brought shillings with me, so. Yeah, and so you can see like, even like at the schools, 1 in 43, so 1 teacher to 43 kids, but if you get into rural areas, you'll see about 80 kids per teacher. You know, the population's very, very young. That's one of the challenges as well. Mm-hmm. There's a slew of reasons for that. You know, AIDS had a pretty big impact on that several years back. Polygamy is a big part of that. Men having three and four wives, taking pieces of the Islamic faith. You know, Islam would suggest that you can have multiple wives as long as you can financially support them. You can continue to have multiple wives and children. But that's not the case. That they can't afford one, and they're having four, five,
and
six.
And that comes into the church too.
Yes, that's correct.
Polygamy is a major problem in the church. Emma talks to me about that. I ask him, like, what are some of the major issues in your community that you're battling? And he talks with that. One Christian man will have three or four different wives, one in the city, one in the village, one in this other village over here, and they'll have several kids. And that's one of the things that he labors over, which is to establish men and to really train and equip men in the proper biblical teachings. Yeah.
And you can imagine the emotions that children wrestle with, knowing that I'm just one of my dad's four families, right? That's tough.
So it's well known.
Yes.
Sometimes
it's a surprise. The family didn't know that they're one of many, mm-hmm. but some of them, they just know, like, my dad's with his other family right now.
Yeah.
And so that's a common issue there. And furthermore, here's another question that you can wrestle with, probably keep you up tonight. When that man comes to know Jesus, what now? You got four families. You're married to four women. How do you respond to that next?
Which one do you choose?
Yeah. So these are not easy answers. Yeah. These are not cookie cutter responses. And the answer that they do get is a tough one.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are the things we get to wrestle through.
So there's this seems like a lot, yeah. right? This seems like, man, this is heavy. But God's at work, right? So maybe you share some stories of what God is doing over there, how the kingdom is advancing, and how the Spirit is at work.
So, as I mentioned, we're working in a community that's 80% Islamic. The other 20% is a mix of different religions. And I would say it's 100%, not 100% confused, but there's a lot of confusion. And the fact that we're getting in behind closed doors, that we're able to work in the community, work with the local leaders, that we can host events, and we're doing that with very little pushback in the community, that's only God. There's no, I don't know how often you can go into a community that has that much opposition that still welcomes you. Emma and God's Kingdom Standard Church did I think it was on New Year's Eve, or maybe it was Easter, they did an Easter celebration in the middle of town, and it's right next to a bar, and so there's a lot of people, and there's some music going, and people in there doing what you do in a bar, you know, middle of the night. And a few of the guys had come out, and they saw that they were playing some Jesus films and preaching, and they went back inside, and they turned the music down, and they came outside, and they redirected traffic. They were not asked to do this. These are Muslims who had been drinking, who came out and said, okay, well, they're preaching over here. You have to take your motorcycle that way. They stood in the road and redirected traffic away from where they were doing this. Mm-hmm. And several of them came over from the bar and sat and listened. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're seeing things like that frequently. That, again, I don't know that that's a common practice mm-hmm. around the world when there's such opposition. We're able to go into the homes of some of the local leaders who, again, are of a different faith and share with them and pray with them and love on their kids. Ripples has now for several years been adding value to this community, and I think it has softened the hearts because they see how much we love and care for their children and for them. And so it is, it's an opportunity where we get into... Emma and others have told us many times, like, you're getting into places that nobody else is getting into. Hmm. And so God is opening doors in ways that we could never have predicted. Our staff is growing in ways that's just been really encouraging. 2 years ago, we rolled out an incentivized reading program. If you know Luke likes books. I saw his office is actually the bookstore, I think, is what I saw.
Ironically.
Is that ironically?
Yeah, right.
I think that's divine. The thing is, we started bringing books over. And there's a joke in Uganda. They say that if you want to hide something, put it in a book. Nobody will ever find it because nobody looks in books. That's a common phrase. That's not something that we made up. And so it's also common that if you give a gift in Uganda, no matter what it is, they will take it. It's considered rude not to accept a gift. Luke could show up with a pack of cigarettes and give out cigarettes to everybody, and they're going to be like, oh, thank you. Like, they'll still take them because it's like this was a gift, even though it's something they don't want. Mm-hmm. I showed up with books. And everybody was like, oh, this is so great. Thank you so much. And there's books on theology. There's John Maxwell, Ken Blanchard, Who Moved My Cheese, all these books just to help add structure for the organization, specifically for our staff. And they all took them, but not a single person read a book. And so we rolled out an incentivized program that gives them Christmas bonuses for reading, but it has changed the culture of the organization where we have a team of people who seek out knowledge now. They like to read their Bible. They like to get into these different books that we have for them to read. They actually will take their own money. This is, I don't know that I can put enough emphasis on how odd this is for Uganda. They'll take their money and pay for classes for them to take to sharpen their skill in their role. We have a culture now of those who are collectively taking responsibility for their own growth and their own relationship, and that, you know, or individually taking that responsibility to collectively advance the organization.
Yeah.
God's doing really, really cool things in Wanyange.
Yeah, and I've talked about this before to you all, just being so grateful and so excited about Emma and his growth, and just seeing his eagerness, both eagerness in wanting to know the scriptures and to teach and to establish his church, but then also to see his eagerness and to walk in Christ, in godly character, which is, that's not common among Ugandan pastors, to really want to seek after godly character.
Most churches that you would attend, and I don't like attacking the church, but I think this is a legitimate label. The pastor eats first. The pastor has the best chair, drives the best car, has the biggest house. It's not as much of a humble role. It is, if you ask a group of 40 kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? A large portion of them will say, I want to be the pastor. And that sounds so nice until you find out it's because the pastor drives a car, because the pastor has a nice house, right? He has the fancy watch and these things. And so Emma, I would say, is on the other end of this. He is one of the most humble individuals that I've met in Uganda. He started going to seminary. And when I sat down with him, I said, how's it going? He said, I have learned more in the last 6 months or 3 months than I've known in previous years. He said, but I have to be careful. I'm like, well, why do you have to be careful? He said, I could become so prideful. He said, I know more than all these pastors in my community now, and they've been preaching for 20, 30 years. He said, I have to be so careful with my pride. And so, like, just recognizing that as a young 25 year old.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm just, that's what makes me want to continue to go back. In fact, I'm planning a trip with, here's a spoiler alert. So I'm going to be going to Uganda in October to do a seminar with the church and some of the other local churches. And Timothy, now who's Timothy? My India partner, right? He's actually going to come and join me in Uganda to help us do the seminar. So it's like super exciting. I am excited to be able to bring India. That's a whole nother thing. Like, just India, Indians are in Uganda, but we don't have time for this. But just to see an Indian, not just an Indian who's going to like love on them, but then an Indian Christian, like they've never even met an Indian Christian, even though like Indians are very common in
Uganda. That would be an oxymoron in Uganda.
Yeah.
That like an Indian Christian, they're like, you said something wrong. Like that's not what that means.
Right. So I'm just super excited for that October seminar. Again, for Emma's growth and everything. So by way of closing, how can Crestview partner with you, with the work there? What does that look like going forward?
Well, so first I want to say thanks. You guys had sent a mission team last year, and that was a huge blessing. One of the most amazing trips we've been a part of. And I knew Crestview was different when we knew a team was coming, and then the elders were reaching out, like, how can we pray for Uganda? What books can we be reading about Uganda? What movies can we watch to learn about the challenges in Uganda? That was a first for us in all the different trips that we've done. And so I just have to say that we were so, just from the very beginning, like, this church has to be the most amazing church when they were reaching out in that way. So
I think they're pretty amazing.
I think they're pretty awesome, yeah. So I guess kudos. I don't know what I'm just saying thank you, because that trip was awesome. And I think it gave us a really good glimpse into who you are as a church. And so mission trips are one way to partner with us. And so in the future, if there's opportunity for that, we would welcome that as well. There are child sponsorship opportunities as well. Where we still have more than 30 kids that are currently not sponsored. We might be right around 30 now. And that, it does a lot for the children to know that there's somebody on the other side of the planet that knows my name, right? Keep in mind, they're growing up a lot of times in homes with, you know, their dad is gone, their single mom, or if their dad's around, he's got multiple families. And to have a family that prays for them, that knows their name, like, it, when they find out that they got a sponsor, like, you can't explain the excitement, right? And on an organization side, I mean, it balances out the organization financially as well. There's just a lot of different benefits. And then I think it shares with you a glimpse into what God's global mission looks like and how you can be a part of that from right here as well. We do have some project fundraisers that we're doing as well. So I'd say there's really four ways. There's mission teams, child sponsorship. We have some different fundraisers, just things that are not funded yet financially. And most importantly, prayer. If you want to follow the Ripples newsletter, you can follow. We have our newsletter as well. Liz has a newsletter. There's lots of different ways, social media. There's lots of different ways that information's coming out. And that's a great way to follow what's actually happening and how you can be in prayer.
So you have a Facebook page, and like the Ripples from the Well has a Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I was trying to list all the ones.
Our marketing guys over here, he's shaking his head. We don't have all of those. Okay.
but at the bare minimum, a Facebook page where they can continue to get like live updates, right? And that's just, I guess, do you just search Ripples from the Well on Facebook?
Yes, yeah, Ripples from the Well. And there's not a whole lot of Ripples from the Wells on Facebook, so you'll find us pretty quick. Look for
Ripples
the blue logo.
Ripples from the Well, Hutchinson, Kansas.
Yeah. So I would have, if I could share a prayer request.
Yeah, please.
That's okay. So I would have two. One is for a student. Her name's Rita. Rita grew up in, again, this Muslim community. Her father used to practice witchcraft. Really, really tough upbringing. But probably one of the most brilliant, this is Rita. Yeah, one of the most brilliant kids ever. And she was going to a government-run school. She was top of the class. We transitioned them into Christian schools that had a higher standard, and she dropped pretty rapidly to the bottom. But within a year, she was back to the top of the class. The reason she had dropped is just the standards were so much higher than she was used to. Graduates number two. There's 600 kids in her class. She graduated number two in the school, went on to university for social work. And her sponsor here in Hutchinson is helping to pay for her to go to Ugandan Christian University to become a social worker. It's going to take a couple years. And she's about, I think, two-thirds of the way through her first year. 3 days ago, her mom had a stroke. And so that's very tough. But to point out a couple of dynamics that may not come to mind when I mention that her mom had a stroke, her mom was no longer practicing witchcraft with her dad. She's a Christian. But sometimes when prayer doesn't get answered in the way that we see, they often will revert back to witchcraft. So I'd ask that you pray for her mom, that she stays steadfast in her relationship with Jesus. Rita has several siblings that live in that home with her mom, and the school that Rita goes to is about an hour and a half away. She's in boarding at a university. And these are the kinds of things that will pull a child out of school and change the future, where she'll end up living in that home and not being able to go out and provide. And so pray for Rita, pray for her mom. We have a second scenario. And this one's for a young girl. We don't have a picture of her today, but her name is Amaria. And so Amaria, you have to remember where we're operating at in Wanyange. There is a lot of challenges. We could talk for a long time about the challenges. Amaria is 15 or maybe 16, and she became pregnant. And last night, they did an emergency C-section. So just last night, they did an emergency C-section. The baby's healthy. About 5 pounds. I was 2 months premature. And Amaria is also doing okay. But I would say pray for her. She's very scared about what the future holds for her. Between a community that will shun her for having a child when she should not have, and a community that would have pushed her into abortion, and we had nudged her in a different direction. And so she's got a tough road ahead no matter how we look at this. Mm-hmm. And the father's not around. So her name is Amaria. If you guys would continue to pray for her, and again for Rita and her mother.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for the work that you're doing, the important work that you're doing, and thank you for allowing us to partner with you. Thanks for all of your guys' support of Ripples from the Well and the work that's going on in Uganda, and I'd ask that you continue to pray, seek out ways in which you can get involved. If you're interested in partnerships, just come talk to me. I can point you in the right direction and would love to help you out and get you plugged in there.